And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our special guests tonight, Mike Levine, Alex Jones, Peter Lance, David Ray Griffin. Alex, I'm going to just let you not react specifically to Peter, but I want you to make your statement because I know you wanted to say something. But again, do not step over anybody. I'm going to have to put you in your own corner. Agreed?
Absolutely, George. And I've got the atomic clock here. I'm actually marking down. I actually had the minority of the time. And so that's why I was trying to jump in there.
Well, we've got three more hours. I'm sure you'd make up for the difference.
You're a sweetheart, and I've just been chomping at the bit. I'll first say this. I didn't make any personal attacks. I didn't draw first blood, and I'm not going there. I will not be diverted, just like you won't, from the truth in this important discussion. You're being very fair. Let me just say this. I didn't talk about conspiracy theories. I talked about PNAC, Dick Cheney specifically saying we need a Pearl Harbor event to galvanize the people. I talked about Operation Northwoods. I went to New York in my film, and I interviewed the people on the ground, then I showed the documents. So a criticism that I'm in my film, I mean, that's crazy. So this is the reality of what we're discussing. It's about September 11th. And you made a key point, George, when you started this broadcast. Look at the Patriot Act. You know, Bush ordered the Border Patrol 2 months ago to stand down in the Tucson sector. They're only doing things that take our liberties and freedoms. It has nothing to do with terrorism. Our government helped found and fund radical Islamic extremists as a, quote, counterbalance against the Soviets going back to the 1950s and then, of course, the 1980s in Afghanistan. When we say that bin Laden is a CIA asset, that I literally have hundreds of newspaper clippings from the 1980s about this young, wonderful hero. So nothing I talked about was a conspiracy theory. There were drills on 9/11 of flying hijacked jets into the very targets that were hit. Dick Cheney was in control from that bunker. Secretary Mineta talked about that in front of the 9/11 Whitewash Commission appointed by Bush. That's not an independent commission, but some major truths did leak out. I've put everything on the line. I have posted everything that I've claimed. It's right there on PrisonPlanet.com. And I think Mr. Lance has done a lot of really important work. But I listened to him that night. You had him on for 3 hours. I stayed up, lost sleep. He talked about how we have Iraqis at Oklahoma City. See, it's an Islamic connection. What he didn't mention was the L.A. Times and Washington Times reporting in the early 90s about George Bush Sr. bringing those 4,000 Iraqis into this country. They've been trained in the 80s at the School of Americas and at other training camps in oppression of the Iraqi people.
How long are you going to get? Is he going to get to speak? I never said
they were government assets.
Oklahoma City. I never said that. That's ridiculous. In fact, I've gone out of my way to separate. In two books, I've gone out of my way to show that the Iraqis had no connection to 9/11 whatsoever. So you didn't listen to me. Here's my point. When you said Bin Laden was a CIA agent, let me finish now. You said Bin Laden was a CIA agent. And when you said, just because Bin Laden worked in the war in Afghanistan on the side of our allies, the Mujahideen, we all know the CIA gave him $3 billion. We all know that they were trained by us. But we turned our back on that theater of operations. That doesn't make Bin Laden, 9 years, 12 years after the Soviets leave Afghanistan, a CIA stooge. And when you say things like that, and when you call yourself the father of the 9/11 truth movement, I mean, you know who the father of the 9/11 truth movement is? There's no father, there are mothers. The Jersey girls, Kristen Breitweiser, Lori Van Auken, the people that lost people that day, that inspired the 9/11 Commission's creation. And when you say reckless things like Bin Laden is a CIA operative, you just undercut all the people who are trying to get at the truth. There is no truth. You say we all know what the truth is. We don't know what the truth is. David Ray is very humble about that. I'm very humble about it. Humility is the best approach here, and tenacity. But when you take this position that I know the truth and, you know, et cetera, and Bin Laden's a CIA operative, just you say it matter-of-factly, like, and then you link that with I've got 500 documents to prove it. I mean, come on, Alex.
Well, let's go on, because we're going to be here for a long time tonight.
Maybe I can put us
go ahead,
the unthinkable.
Mike Levine here.
This is Mike Levine, yeah. Let me do the unthinkable and take everything we're talking about and give your listeners a game plan. This is what I'm trained to do with the government. Give them an actual game plan where you guys, all you listeners, can have an effect. A man by the name of Joe Weber, he's a 30-year veteran, an old colleague of mine. He is the the head of the Houston Office of Department of Homeland Security, the ICE Division, Bureau of Immigration, Customs, and Enforcement. Anyway, Joe Weber's unit identified people, and this has me furious and frightened at the same time, identified people who are fundraisers for Al-Qaeda. At this time, when those funds are going to Iraq and they're paying rewards for the heads of our soldiers, at the time when those funds are going to Al-Qaeda and going definitely into the planning for not one nuclear weapon, but six or seven to go off at one time. That is what the latest intelligence is. And Joe Weber wanted to put a wiretap in on these people. Who stopped him? The FBI. And this man came forward.
But why, Mike? Why would they stop them?
Well, he can't get an answer, and he's serving with the government right now. And this is why I'm asking you listeners right now to write. Go through my website, expertwitnessradio.org. I will give you a transcript of Joe Weber's statement, this brave, courageous man on the inside, expertwitnessradio.org. I will email you his statement, and I would like every listener to go with this statement to their local media, to their congressmen, to their senators, to your so-called elected protectors, and demand answers. You want to know which FBI agent stopped it, and Joe Weber, who is a high-ranking official in the U.S. government, cannot get answers. He appeared on NBC Dateline. Now, that is courage, because he's still on the job. Now, you Americans listening to this show, you've got to understand that just like 9/11 happened, when those mushroom clouds appear over five and six cities at once, your life is going to change. Everything you think that you're worried about right now is over. This world is going to be different. This is your chance to do something.
Well, Michael, let me ask you this, because Peter Lance has mentioned that he believes of these five potential explanations I read last hour, that the top three could be very possible, and that was entirely the work. First three, top three. That's what I said.
Okay.
The work of Al-Qaeda in Arab hijackers, the government had prior knowledge of the attack, but their incompetence allowed it to occur, or the government knew the attack was coming, and they consciously allowed it to happen. Those were the first three.
Right. Okay.
Alex Jones believes in either the last one, which was the government ran the entire operation, or the sub one, which I added, and that is the group that puts itself above government, working with Al-Qaeda, that they ran it. What about you, Mike?
Well, coming from my personal experience and talking to people on the inside, when I say personal experience, working with Central Intelligence, trying to work with them, I was a supervisor of an FBI DEA task force. It's a combination of two things. One is monstrous blowback. People making horrific decisions to support the worst, the actual people who do the most possible damage to the U.S. become our allies. And yes, Bin Laden was the recipient. Whether he was officially a CIA asset, I doubt it, because they do somewhat of a good job covering their butts. But the fact is, you can trace almost $1 billion right to Bin Laden. Right at this moment, those choices are being made. One glaring absence, for instance, from the Homeland Security, our counterterrorism efforts, is the Drug Enforcement Administration. Now, you have to ask yourself why. All the intelligence in the world indicates that Bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, is now living off of drug trafficking. And yet the Drug Enforcement Administration is omitted from FBI, CIA, and Homeland Security. They had to start their own little unit.
Would you think it's possible, Mike, that we really, and when I'm saying we, I don't mean the hard Americans here who would like Bin Laden on a tray, but that we really don't want him captured, that there's a possibility that there's a group out there that somehow is trying to protect this guy?
You want to know why that's possible, George? It's because there are people running these operations, these covert operations, who might come up with some idiotic, stupid reason why you want to keep Bin Laden alive.
I agree with that.
And you cannot underestimate these people until you work with them and understand how bad they are. Let me give you an example of what happened to me. I wrote a book, Deep Cover. Now, that book was a blow-by-blow action of the one of the biggest drug cases in our history, going to the top of the drug world in three countries, and Edwin Meese, the Attorney General of the United States, blew the cover of the operation. Now, you hear me? I'm naming Edwin Meese. The book was a New York Times bestseller. Yet nothing was done. The only person who came forward to do anything, the book was brought on Project Censored, Bill Moyers. And before we taped the show, Bill Moyers looked at me and he said, "I have to tell you, your book is the best read book between the beltways, but the least talked about." Because I named Edwin Meese, and I put in enough information in the book to indict the man for obstruction of justice. Why is that important now? For several reasons. One is that a New York Times bestseller can name a man, give you enough information to indict him, the Attorney General of the United States, yet Congress ignores it. So whatever valid information Alex has right now, whatever valid information we put forward, we have to put a fire under Congress to take action. They have never taken action, and that's why 9/11 happened. And that is why nuclear terrorism is about to happen. So how do you make them take action? You take a man who right now is in the newspapers, was in the newspapers, he's already vanished. He's a serving veteran. He is naming the FBI as stopping an investigation into the people raising funds for Al-Qaeda. Now, people, if we want to stop it, if we want to get our country back, we have to demand an indictment of those FBI people who stopped this investigation.
And maybe people who have told them to stop it, too.
Yes, and that can only happen. You have a man like Joe Weber coming forward, and he's a man who spent his life testifying before grand juries. This is the most credible kind of evidence you can find. Now, the only way any action is going to be taken, we have to flash back and look at what happened in Watergate. The only way we got action in Watergate was that the stories were persistent. Bob Woodward did the most clever thing in the world, and he's talking about it. He said that what the value of Deep Throat was, he knew that one story would do nothing. He had to keep Watergate in the news to get action. Deep Throat was able to help him do that. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Okay, I want to move this along, but finish it up, Mike.
Anyway, I just want to urge people, you have a chance now. You can, instead of sitting there wringing your hands and saying, okay, I believe it, here's a chance to take definitive action to get your country back. This is listener-sponsored radio. I don't make any money. Just get expertwitnessradio.org, expertwitnessradio.org. I will put the transcript of Joe Weber's statement in your hands. You tell me what the reaction of your congressman is. You tell me what the reaction of local media is, and I'll put you on radio in New York.
When I started this program, you know, we're not going to get to the answer of what really happened on that horrible day on 9/11. We're just not going to do it tonight. But what I want us to do is to be able to look beyond what happened on that day and look at some of the things that are going on right now and begin to connect more and more dots. First you, David, then I'm going to go to you, Alex. Are you concerned about everything that's been going on after the fact, David, and that is the Patriot Act, now this purported plan to do away with Amendment 22 of the Constitution so some president can run and run and run, and areas like that. Does that bother you?
Well, of course. And the lecture I gave at Madison that C-SPAN rather amazingly covered and carried a couple times was called 9/11 and the American Empire. And so I was focusing on the fact that at least a viable theory is that 9/11 was orchestrated by the Bush administration and its Pentagon in order to carry out the plans for empire, which include weaponizing space. And many people would say, oh, you're paranoid about that. And then what, about a month ago, Tim Weiner tells us, front page of the New York Times, well, we're getting ready to weaponize space. And weaponizing space, one estimate has it that that'll be at least $1 trillion. And that's why that my first book was called The New Pearl Harbor, and that document, Rebuilding America's Defenses, that Alex cited, is talking about the technological transformation of the military, and preeminent in that is the U.S. Space Command, and putting weapons in space. And so one of the major motives would have been, when people ask about motives, is getting money for that. And sure enough, on 9/11 itself, Rumsfeld, who should have been so disoriented that the Pentagon, for the first time in history, had been attacked, he was not disoriented. He was on message. He used the attacks of that day to browbeat Senator Levin and get an enormous increase in funding. And he specifically said, "Does this convince you that we need more money for the military for missile defense?"
All right, Alex, let's have you connect some of the dots that have occurred after 9/11. What are the things out there that concern you that point to the direction of why this could have been done by people above government?
George, I want to respond to that, but if I can have 60 seconds just to say this. You know, we talk about is bin Laden CIA. We have Buzzy Krongard, number three at the CIA, 2 months ago telling the London Times in a sit-down interview that we don't want to capture bin Laden, and then giving his reasons and saying basically we're protecting him. Now just type in, number three man at CIA says don't catch bin Laden. We have him at the American hospital for 10 days being treated, and American doctors on record telling the Washington Times and Le Figaro this. So again, I'm not talking about conspiracies. You just heard Professor Griffin mention what I cited. I'm looking at the documents. I'm looking at Dick Cheney saying we need a tax for this empire. So, again, what am I worried about in the future? I totally agree with Michael Levine. Folks, Dick Cheney has said nukes are going to go off in this country. He said it's not a question of if, but when. And I ask you, how will they reengineer society when that happens? Why did Bush order the Border Patrol to stand down? Just type that into Google. You'll get every mainstream paper you can imagine. I am talking about America being turned into a total police state, instituting the draft after the next attack, total police state, checkpoints everywhere. All the legislation is being passed. I'm talking about the future of all our families, my family. I am literally got the hair on the back of my neck standing up right now. I put my life on the line to tell the truth on these issues. I spend 10 hours a day on top of everything else I do fighting this and exposing this. These guys are so arrogant. They put their battle plans out. They said what they were going to do. We have the official U.S. government documents saying they want to carry out attacks and explaining why they want to do it. And it's all orchestrated by these shadowy shadow government groups. They now admit the shadow government that gets all of this billions and billions, tens of billions of dollars in block op funding. Basically, the military-industrial complex, when the Soviet Union fell, has written about 100 white papers saying we need a new enemy. And the perfect enemy is a shadowy Islamic terror network that can never be defeated, kind of the Orwellian gold.
Well, but you have to agree, though, Alex, that Islamic fundamentalist group that's out there doing whatever they do, they are out there.
Oh, absolutely. They are real, but they were not involved in 9/11. Those men on those planes were U.S. government assets taking part in live drills.
All right, now, who do you mean? Well, let me ask you this, Alex, and we're
I jump in at some point.
I'll tell you what. We're coming up to the break. Let's bring this back in when we do. I'm going to go to you, Alex. I want you to tell me who you think was on those planes. If anybody, we'll get that from you, and then we'll get to you too, Peter. I'm going to control this a little bit more so we don't step all over each other. You all did real well on that half hour. I'll be back in a moment with all our guests, Mike Levine, Peter Lance, David Ray Griffin, Alex Jones, in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. If you need to email me, that's available to you at george@coasttocoastam.com. All of this roundtable discussion gets emotional. Imagine what it's like out there in the world, huh? Why so many people do not agree to agree. Alex, let's talk a little bit about these planes that hit the towers, whatever may have hit the Pentagon, and of course crashed into that field in Pennsylvania. The towers, what do you think hit the towers? Who do you think was in them?
Well, George, again, it takes 3 hours in my new film, Martial Law, to cover all of this, and we detail it all at PrisonPlanet.com and Infowars.com. But what I do is the same thing that David Ray Griffin does. The official story from end to end is a complete fraud. I started out on 9/11, and of course 2 months before, looking at what they claimed happened. Then I looked at the evidence, and I took my time, years, to come up in an investigation with specifics that we can prove. And I do believe planes hit the towers. I believe that...
Well, we saw that. Something
hit them. Yes, I believe that it's a disinformation campaign to say that they didn't, and we know the government is putting a lot of money out in disinformation on the web. That's public. Billions of dollars in fake news. So I avoid that. What I focus in on is all of the evidence. And we know that the supposed... Well, first off, earlier, Mr. Levine... was mentioning people being blocked. I interviewed David Shippers a week after 9/11, the chief impeachment lawyer. He later got up in front with FBI agent Robert Wright and others at the National Press Club and said, here's the national security letters. We've been threatened with arrest. This video clip, by the way, is on the website. And every exhibit is. And he said, all we can tell you is the Bushes vacation with the bin Ladens. He and, of course, the head of Judicial Watch, Larry Klayman, it was Larry Klayman that said that, Robert Wright. All we can say is the Bushes vacation with the bin Ladens. Now, that was the head of Judicial Watch there with Robert Wright crying, holding the letter saying, I'll be arrested if I tell you what I know. A 6-foot-4 man breaking down, hugging the lectern, with Larry Klayman patting him on the back, going, we can't tell you, we'll be arrested. Well, before they got threatened with arrest, I interviewed these individuals. And Bush signed W199I. The BBC Newsnight led with it. Just type W199I in. And Bush, months before 9/11, ordered the FBI and CIA, under threat of national security arrest, not to stop al-Qaeda in this country. So now, fast forwarding, we know that the supposed hijackers were trained at the Pensacola Naval Air Station, MSNBC, Pensacola News Journal. We know that they were trained at that base. Then they went and created a history, classic black op operation. They were the decoys. They went to flight schools, couldn't even get Cessnas off the ground, then magically did maneuvers that no pilot, I mean, I've interviewed many airline pilots, fighter jet pilots, no one can do this, especially, you know, three times out of four. And what we know is they had their houses, their cars, their credit cards paid for by the CIA and FBI. When they would leave the country to an al-Qaeda summit in Malaysia, I've interviewed the people that were at the different consulates. They were ordered, let them in. This is part of an anti-terrorism training drill. FBI informants were living in their houses with them in San Francisco and in Florida, both ends of the country. We know they, in the weeks before 9/11, were on American and United flights. The famous actor, James Woods, he went on Fox News days after 9/11 and said, yeah, I'm on the plane flying from New York to L.A. We stop in Phoenix, but before we land, these guys are getting up, acting like they're going to hijack the plane, doing weird stuff. I get off the plane and I say, these guys are about to hijack. One of them was admittedly Muhammad Atta. And the FBI holds him and says, national security, you ought to get James Woods on, national security, you'll be arrested if you talk about this. So what we know is there were drills that morning of flying jets into the very buildings that got hit. We know NORAD kept asking, is this a drill? FAA, is this a drill? We know Dick Cheney's in control of the drills from the bunker under the White House. That's admitted. That's come out in testimony. And he said the order still stands, and he yelled at an aide when the aide kept saying, do something, do something. So we know all this is going on. They're on board the aircraft, and then these aircraft fly around for an hour and 25 minutes, knowing they've, quote, been hijacked. Nothing's done where any other pilot will tell you, you're off course 5 minutes, they'll launch F-16s on you. My dad's a pilot. I mean, this happens hundreds and hundreds of times over the years.
But are you saying, Alex, that these people who you say were under the control of, let's say, the CIA, that they willingly committed suicide?
No, they believed that they were part of a drill. They were on board the aircraft taking part in yet another live-action drill where they were decoys and where they tested airport security.
All right, but who then, on that plane that they were on, who rammed those two planes into the two towers?
Well, for 40 years they've been remote-controlling aircraft, and from my internal Pentagon sources that have always turned out to be accurate, I'm on record over and over again reporting things, then it comes out mainstream news, something was released in the plane, knocking them out, and then the planes were taken over by remote control and flown into the buildings. But we know they were government operatives. We know they were trained at U.S. military bases. We know they were protected and funded. We know they were having the drills. We know all of this. It's like police in a murder investigation. They catch the guy with the bloody butcher knife, They find the dead body buried on his property. The woman's skin is under his fingernails. And then do we know all the specifics of did he stab her before he raped her, or did he rape her and then did he stab her? All the little, tiny, minute specifics. Then we have a classic intelligence operation with all of these other cover stories and confusion and other dummies mixed into it where it's this swirling mess. And interestingly enough, George, the official U.S. government plan to carry out a 9/11-style attack, Operation Northwood.
Why, that's true. That is a real document. Now, Alex, let me ask the other three if they believe that this was possible. Peter Lantz, do you?
First of all, you've let this guy run on and on and on, and he says things like, we know they were trained at a base in Pensacola. That is absolutely absurd. First of all, what it does is it totally underestimates the effectiveness of Al-Qaeda. It doesn't allow for the fact that bin Laden put a cell in New York City as early as 1989, that he funded the first original World Trade Center bombing operation, that the FBI failed to identify the cell, screwed up, failed to prevent the first bombing. They ignored the evidence from Manila of the plane hijacking plot in 1994. Massive amounts of culpability by the FBI and the Justice Department. And when you come up with these wild cases and you have a guy like Alex with great authority, we know this, we know that, it's wrong. He said they had an FBI operative living with them in San Francisco. That's totally wrong. There was an FBI asset in San Diego with Al-Midar and Al-Hazmi. And there are all kinds of, my book cover up, half the book points goes over the same ground that he talked about, the war games, et cetera. Let me just give you, if I may, my scenario, okay? If you don't mind. We've heard these outlandish allegations tonight, and the problem is they undercut the ability of the American people to get to the real truth. Because ultimately, what's the solution, Alex? How do we get rid of the shadow government? You know, let's say we impeach Bush and Cheney. How do we get rid of this shadow government? George, let me just thoughtfully, if I may, have 2 minutes to.
Of course,
to
Peter.
Give you my scenario,
I mean, the reason why you four are on this program is to give your dialogue and your views. I don't expect you guys to agree with each other.
All right. Thank you. Here's what I believe happened. I believe that bin Laden, the Al-Qaeda, has been an incredibly lethal force. My new book, and by the way, if people can go to, everybody mentions their website, peterlance.com, my name, L-A-N-C-E. I have a timeline under the word terrorism that goes back to 1989. It shows that three of the men who did the World Trade Center bombing, one who killed Rabbi Nasser, one who did the bridge and tunnel plot with Blind Sheikh Rahman, were all being trained in 1989 by a guy named Ali Mohammed. Ali Mohammed is the enigma and the black hole of the entire 9/11 story, and that's what I'm doing my new book on. This guy literally was working for the CIA in the mid-80s and may have always been working for the CIA. He later worked as an FBI informant as early as 1993. He was in Somalia when the Blackhawks went down. He defected to America, became a U.S. citizen, married a woman in Silicon Valley, became a U.S. Army sergeant, got posted to Fort Bragg where the Green Berets and Delta Force train, and is coming up on weekends to train the first World Trade Center bombing cell, an Al-Qaeda cell, for bin Laden. He then moves bin Laden out of Afghanistan in 91, it trains his personal bodyguard in coast Afghanistan, moves him back in 96, and personally scouts the African embassies for bin Laden, takes the pictures in 94 where bin Laden says, put the bomb, 234 killed, 5,000 injured in 1998, 9 years after the FBI had him on their radar. Now, does all that negligence on the part of the Justice Department and incompetence, and what I document in my books, is cover your you-know-what?
Mm-hmm.
They screwed up in 92. They didn't want to admit that Ramzi Youssef was the architect of 9/11 in Manila in 94. They didn't want to admit that Youssef and Khalid Sheikh were involved in the crash of TWA-800. And it's all covering up, building walls. The Jamie Gorelick memo. Jamie Gorelick, who went on to be on the 9/11 commission, she should be indicted for obstruction of justice, in my opinion. Now, that's not exactly a conservative statement, but the reason is that Mohammed Jamal Khalifa, the brother-in-law of Osama bin Laden, they captured him, they arrested him, the FBI, the INS, in December 1994 in San Francisco on his way from the Philippines and back. He's got a PDA with tons of evidence linking him to the original World Trade Center bombing, cell, the Manila cell. He's a treasure trove. He's Bin Laden's brother-in-law. He could have given us the family jewels on Al-Qaeda. And Jamie Gorelick, who is a deputy attorney general, the guy's got a death sentence hanging over his head in Jordan, pushes for this guy to leave America to be extradited out of the country. Now, many of what the things that Alex has said are true. Bush, they helped the Bin Laden family get out in the days after. Craig Unger brilliantly documented that. I believe the scenario is as follows. The U.S. government so utterly, catastrophically failed, despite the billions of dollars we paid for intelligence over the decades, catastrophically failed to detect this plot and covered up and built walls and stovepipes. And then this Bush administration came in where the drums were pounding, the light was blinking red, the hair was on fire, and they decided to take advantage of it. I don't believe they planned it, but I believe they knew it was coming, and they decided to do a Reichstag-like event, to have this attack on our country, for all the things that Alex and David Ray have talked about, for the strategic advantage of being able to go into the Middle East, to pump up the Pentagon defense spending, putting us into a deficit after Clinton had finally brought us, you know, into a surplus. And all the things that they talk about, the long-term strategic goals of Bush and Cheney were realized, but they took advantage of this plot. They let the guard down of this country. They were criminally negligent. Now, is there a difference in the law? I have a law degree. Is there a difference between criminal negligence, somebody hits you with a car on the street, their drunk driver, and another person with intent and malice aforethought shoots you in the head?
Absolutely.
There's a difference. But you're still dead. And that's ultimately, that's why I believe many of the things that Alex and David Ray say are true. My way of getting there is different.
Okay.
And the thing that troubles me is when you pull it all together and you mix it all together into this big stew of shadow government, nothing will ever change because we'll never be able to prove that, whereas we can indict Jamie Gorelick. And if we indict Jamie Gorelick, if some courageous prosecutor put that woman on the dock, she would flip in a minute, and then we would know the entire truth behind what happened on 9/11.
Well, but I think what is so dramatic, Peter, from you, from Alex, from David, from Michael, is even though you all differ in some of the concepts of what may have happened, you all agree that there's something very, very wrong here.
Very, very wrong. Believe me.
Yeah, Mike, this is Mike Levine.
Go ahead, Mike.
Let me say that back in 97, when we first predicted 9/11, Ralph McGeehee outed a FOIA document of his own agency, Central Intelligence, wherein they bragged of their ability using media, publishing, movies, to change, and this is a direct quote, to convert intelligence failures to successes. And that way they were bragging in-house that they were able to do that with their budget. If you go down the line through their history, and both Peter and I have the tape of the FBI agent firing Imad Salim, an informant who had infiltrated Al-Qaeda, that the same people who did 9/11, but he had infiltrated them just prior to the bomb going off in 1993 in the World Trade Center. Now, he may be the most important informant in our history. Why? He was a very smart man. He tape-recorded his own conversations with the FBI. Now, utilizing my training as an Office of Professional Responsibility reviewer and inspector of operations, I listened to that tape, and what I heard was monstrous ineptitude, incredible ineptitude. They fired this man from a $500-a-week job while, and he says this on the tape, we are planning the bomb. And it's going to go off, and you won't know where, or you won't know when. The FBI then, with the compliance of mainstream media, after the bomb went off that they could have stopped, rehired him at $1.5 million to, quote-unquote, solve the case. New York Times, every major media outlet gave them credit for solving the World Trade Center bombing when they could have stopped it. But it goes further. What we realize is that had they kept Salim undercover, had they kept Salim on his $500-a-week job, he would have been hand-to-hand with Youssef. Youssef, who, of course, had Plan Bojinka on his computer. What was the reaction? And Peter and I both have this on tape, too. Bob Blitzer, who was the head of counterterrorism for the FBI, when confronted with the fact that in 1995, there was the plan to hijack planes and fly them into buildings on Ramzi Youssef's computer, and what was his reaction?
Well,
his reaction was, well, he was just one guy.
Okay, now we've got tape that Peter gave us of Salim, a short version. Peter, why don't you very briefly set it up as Mike did? Is that pretty accurate?
Yeah, very, very briefly. Ahmad Salem was recruited by a brilliant FBI agent named Nancy Floyd, a young, feisty woman from Texas. And he was an Egyptian. He, within days, got into the Blind Sheikh cell, right into this Osama bin Laden-funded cell. And a desk jockey named Carson Dunbar, an ASAC in the New York office with no experience, came in, didn't like him, didn't like Nancy Floyd, and basically changed the rules of engagement, and he withdrew, okay? He got out. And he said to Nancy, don't call me when the bombs go off, plural, okay? When they brought him back for the $1.5 million to investigate this bridge and tunnel plot, he began taping them. He was so suspicious of the Bureau. He trusted Nancy immensely. What you're going to hear on this tape is FBI agent John Antisev, who was supposed to be his handler, is dickering with him over paying like $500 worth of expenses.
Short version here, Peter.
Yeah, and basically he says, you'll hear him say, you had an informant who knew that a bomb was being built. Go ahead.
Everything was submitted with a receipt.
Yeah.
And now it's questionable.
It's not questionable. It's like a little out of ordinary.
Okay.
You know.
All right. I don't think it was. If that's what you think, guys, fine. But I don't think that, because we was start already building the bomb, which is went off in the World Trade Center. It was built by supervision from the Bureau and the DA, and we was all informed about it, and we know that the bomb start to be built. By who? By your confidential informant. What a wonderful, great case.
Wow.
And then he put his head in the sand and said, oh, no, that's not true. He is son of a b-. Okay. Oh. It's built with a different way in another place, and that's it.
And what did he all mean by that, Peter?
What I believe he mean, Mike and I have a difference of opinion, but I believe that the FBI had another operative. I believe that operative was Ali Mohammed, the same guy who snookered them for years. And I believe that he was operating at the time, and they may have had prior knowledge. I can't prove this yet, and I only like to say the things I can prove. But just as with Oklahoma City, there's new evidence emerging, George, as you know, that they may have been a sting gone awry. The FBI may have had blood in its hands in the original World Trade Center bombing.
David Ray Griffin, briefly before we hit the top of the hour, you concur with most of what you have heard?
I would rather use my time, George, to talk about some evidence.
I tell you what we'll do. We'll give you the first shot when we come back, okay?
Okay.
We'll do that. We'll hear from Alex Jones, Peter Luntz, Mike Levine. This is one rapid night. We'll be back in a moment. But again, what I have heard here tonight for the first time is four people with different views on what happened on that horrible day of 9/11, 2001, is that there's something very strange indeed going on.